Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassami. This morning I had the opportunity to meet lots of people from everyday life. I stood with my alms bowl and I had a good opportunity to observe the faces and how people are in a hurry. And there I stood with my alms bowl trying to stand still. I've done this for many years. And it's a pretty barren landscape. Not many people approach and not many people know what I'm doing there. But there was the odd, brave soul that ventured to stop and say, "What do you want?" And because they saw the empty alms bowl, most people have seen somebody standing on a corner with a bowl or sitting on the street with a cup or some container in which you can throw coins. So quite a few people try to throw a coin in my bowl. And I'm trained to stop the coin because we don't handle money. So I had to let everyone who might be doing that know that I couldn't accept their coin. There was one woman who managed to throw the coin right into the bowl. So I said, "I'm really sorry, I can only take food." So she very reluctantly took the coin out. I could see that this causes confusion because our society is fueled by money. And that's a form of exchange. I was trying the whole time to stand there very mindfully without having greed arise in the mind. And that's quite difficult to do when you're cold and you have to stand quite still and you need to empty your mind. So I tried my best to be composed and be a good ambassador for the Buddha, because that's my job. That's what my life is, to be a real daughter of the Blessed One. So it requires being very mindful and being aware of the thoughts that are coming up. And meanwhile, the body is old and it's tired and it's cold. And all those kinds of sensations are going on. But no, there's a practice of focus on the bowl and renouncing those, whatever one is experiencing, not to buy into it, not to give into it, not to forget, "No, I'm here to hold the bowl, to be an alms mendicant," just waiting, not even waiting, just standing, like being a little flag for the Buddha, just a flag, just a symbol. This is a daughter of the Buddha, alms mendicant. Our way of life is to receive that which is given freely, without asking for anything, just being present in the present moment. That is just like what we do when we come to sit here. We're just meditating. We're not sitting here to impress each other or even ourselves, "I'm such a good meditator," because that doesn't give us anything, really. That's a misguided way of meditating. So I did continuously try to bring my attention back to the empty bowl without wanting it to be filled or wanting people to stop, observing and seeing, "Oh, there's just be kind, just be the daughter of the Buddha." And then somebody put an apple in my bowl. When they did that, I felt so much gratitude. And then somebody put a pepper in my bowl. Each time this happened, I felt this wave of rejoicing at the kindness, because they didn't have to do that. It's just that generosity, it seems to be such a universal quality. wherever I've stood, there's not a place that I've stood where I didn't get something, even if it was just someone's effort to put a coin, and then they would say, well, I don't have any food, when I say I can't take the coin. But they had the intention to offer something. I'm a total stranger. After the person put the pepper in, the pepper was sticking out. And I noticed a great shift in the way people responded to me. Because when they would approach and see the pepper sticking out, immediately they knew, this person must want food. And it seemed to change right after that. The momentum with which things started coming into the bowl increased. So, it's very interesting how what we present, like, I know that to most people what I'm wearing is sheets, and it's all the same color, and I have no hair, and I'm just standing there, and they want to go shopping. Do they have to look at me? Am I going to attack them? Am I going to try to sell them something? So I could see in some people a look of fear. And fear is not a beautiful thing for people to hold. So with the fear would come sometimes also a wish to smile. And I would try to return the smile with a joyful look. And some people who didn't have fear, they just said, hello. And some people said, good morning, and didn't look. And some people covered up their fear or their awkwardness. But once the pepper appeared, I didn't see fear. It was just so interesting. It was like, oh, it's about food. Maybe she's selling peppers. What I also saw, I saw people driving up in really fancy cars, dressed with the latest fashion. I'm trying not to judge, but I'm collecting data. With the eye of an anthropologist. How do people live, and what does it mean? There were so many stories coming and going. The whole theater of human life passing in front of my eyes. But it isn't theater, it's real. These are people that are just living their everyday life, and their tiredness, their discouragement, their fear, their aggression. Some people almost ran me over as they came out. We're oblivious, we're slightly unmindful, rushing, don't want to be stopped, don't want to know, don't want to see what's there of the street where they live. And others so curious, asking, who are you? And there are some meditators. There's so much in life and so much in this world that bears compassion. And so I realized I'm not just an alms mendicant standing as a flag for the Buddha, but to really be an alms mendicant standing in the footsteps of the Buddha on the path, I must be a vessel of compassion and a vessel of loving kindness for all these beings, every single one of them, the ones that didn't want to know and the ones that wanted to know. The ones that didn't have a moment, the ones that had something to offer, wanting to find out, wanting to respect, some that were obviously very well off, and some that were really, really poor. Life was not easy for them. And I didn't feel like a stranger. I felt, I'm a part of these people. We are all here on this planet together. So these recollections, I am of the nature to age. I am of the nature to sicken. I am of the nature to die. I have not gone beyond aging. I have not gone beyond sickness. I have not gone beyond dying. These recollections are really important to help us develop compassion, not only for ourselves, but for each other, to see the suffering around us. We can easily be caught up with our own suffering. The moment that I was able to really be with every being that was coming and going, and watching their hurriedness or their tiredness, their joyfulness, their fear to come close, and their generosity, their kindness, I was able to bring up metta, karuna, mudita, and upekkha, because we are the owners of our kamma, born of our kamma, heir to our kamma, related to our kamma, abide supported by our kamma. Whatever kamma that we do, of that we will be the heirs. So it's very important how we choose to live, how we choose to see ourselves, how we choose to see others, how we choose to interact with the world, how we practice this path, and how we enable ourselves to come back to the present moment and not give up, but to stand in this moment, stand and be still. Be still, be present, and bring up those beautiful qualities of mind that help us to endure the cold, the tiredness, or the unhappiness that's around us. And then to reflect on our own unhappiness. How unhappy are we really? Do we really have a problem? What is the nature of our problem? How much can we breathe wisdom into our perception of our problem? How wise can we be so that we're developing that wisdom by being bearers of compassion, bearers of kindness, bearers of generosity? We want to receive generosity, but if we can stand in the present moment with a generous heart, the joy will come, the goodness arises, even if it only arises within us. That's such a gift. So if nobody had put anything in my bowl, I still had the intention to cultivate that type of heart, but the pepper really helped. And so it's amazing what life gives you, how things arise if we stay open, if we stay empty, if we're not preoccupied with our own stuff. This is what the Buddha encourages. So develop goodness. Develop the empty, open, empty of delusion, empty of ill will, empty of greed heart. And then we can really live our life consciously, wakefully, available to others as well, for the sake of all beings. Do you have any questions?
Can you get stuck in the meditation practice?
What does stuck mean to you?
Lack of progress.
What is progress? Because a pure stillness would have no wanting in it at all. Would not even have the thought that I'm stuck. So examine, is it just a belief or a concept? Or is it really a space of brightness, fullness of presence, total awareness, distance from the world? seclusion, loss of the sense of self, empty of the sense of self, non-greed, non-ill-will, non-delusion, no thinking. But if after that stillness of mind you start thinking about it and wishing it would stay forever, then you're thinking from a place of conditioning rather than a place of freedom. But in itself, that stillness of mind is very free. So we have to be careful not to taint it or corrupt it with post-stillness desire and greed and hatred, because then we've stopped purifying your mind that brought that stillness. So that will prevent it from being sustained. We want it to grow. We want it to persist and be sustainable for every moment. But if it fades away and we're back in what next? We've already forgotten the teaching. Just to be present for it and allow it to deepen without being attached to a deepening, just by working on mindfulness and sharpening your awareness and your letting go-ness, the renunciation. But to artificially inject PT, that could be a wrong use of effort, because the real effort is in surrendering into the experience of the moment and not trying to manipulate it. And also, through the awareness of the mind state, one has to be careful not, when joy does arise, and if one feels joy with that kind of stillness of mind, one has to be careful not to attach to the joy. Everything that we experience, every state that we experience, the growth of it, when we look back on it afterwards, as we deepen our meditation, we see the growth, or we see the maturity of the mind as it deepens its awareness. So the ability to stay present, to be aware, the brightness of the mind, the purification of the mind, continues to grow. And even with very deep states of stillness, one can get so attached to that, that one is not willing to let it go for the knowledge that those states will allow us to realize. And we can get very attached. It suggests one thing for a beginner and something else for someone who's more experienced in the practice. But really, it depends on what one is trying to develop. If we're only seeking the stillness of mind, but we're not trying to grow in wisdom, then we haven't understood. We're perhaps not going to further our development. People have to realize what is the purpose of this practice. And some people just want to relieve stress. So if they haven't understood, they have to be guided further in that. But certainly, at some points in the practice, one has to get very mature in the truth before one can advance to a greater opening of the heart. It's not just about jhanas or any anas. It's practice and purify your mind and develop the Eightfold Noble Path. Because the Eightfold Noble Path, well, what is the way to enlightenment, really? What is it? The Eightfold Noble Path. It's not one fold. It's right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, how we spend our time, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. And right concentration might be better described right single-pointed mind. So if one is developing all of those factors, then one is really developing the path. But if one is only trying to develop exquisite stillness, that's not the path. But there are beings in this world who aren't even Buddhists who have developed the path. And so we have to remember that, how they developed it, because they have developed these qualities of mind. They've developed an incredible level of virtue, uncompromising virtue. They've developed, through that virtue, a purity of speech and conduct which allows their mind to be very present and very available, open to that which is true, to the truth. And then they don't have a lot of greed. They're able to notice greed and not give in to it. They live a simple life, a contented life, and they serve. They're very compassionate. They serve others without desiring anything for themselves. And they're wise. Many years ago, before the fall of Tibet, a Tibetan nun, betrothed by her parents to some man, she escaped from her home and ran away and just survived in the wilderness. And then she came to a village and lived there dependent on the people in this village and never left that hut for some 40 years. And the Western journalist and the happy monk, Matthew Ricard?
Yeah.
Go to this nun's hut, and they knock on the window, and this ancient-looking face appears at the window. No teeth, big smile, big eyes. She opens the window, and they start asking her questions. We heard that you have never left your hut for all these years. Can you please tell us, what is your practice? And she says, my practice is Om Mani Padme Hum. That's her practice. May all beings be well and happy. Om Mani Padme Hum. That's her practice. Not trying to get jhana. Just Om Mani Padme Hum. Just praying for the well-being of others and living on the alms that she received through her little window from the people in her village. That's how she's lived. Never left that hut. You know, there are these beings. We have to be very careful. What's the direction we're going in and how we want to develop that? And what kind of skill do we want to develop? And not to forget the Buddha's whole, the holistic teaching is the Eightfold Noble Path. It's not a One-Fold Noble Path. It's not a Three-Fold Noble Path. The wisdom component is right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration, or right one-pointedness of mind. But the other limbs of the path are also very, very important. And it's not a three-limbed path by any means. And if we strive, and our striving is because we got to get that degree, and I mean this degree of attainment, because we want to be special, or we want this peace of mind so that we can have something. This is so deluded, because I will never be enlightened. There is no I that gets enlightened. We have to understand the emptiness of I-ness. And if we can approach the whole path without that kind of desiring, that kind of ambition, and come from a place of emptiness and letting go to the truth, and having the humility to be committed to that. I had this resolution coming up very strongly, seeing the incredible tragedy of the lives of many of the beings that passed by. I resolved to commit myself even more to this path of purity so that I could be a vehicle for compassion. To stop the fear. I've not gone beyond fear. I've not gone beyond worry. I've not gone beyond anger. I've not gone beyond greed. If we can go beyond those kind of qualities, then our minds will be so pure, unshakable, You call it what you will, but that unshakability eventually matures into a consummation of virtue. It's the perfection of virtue. That's what this path is. This is a joy not based on any worldly experience, based purely on the mind knowing itself. The mind experiencing the brilliance, the beauty, the brightness of its own inner illumination. That brightness is within us. All we're doing is dusting, polishing. Polish, polish, dust, dust. Forget about degrees, really. Because if the sun is shining, even if it's winter, you can have pity. It's not based on degrees like 25 degrees. It's just the sun just has the nature to shine. And if whether it's winter or summer, we go to where the temperature is not disturbing because we've pulled out the pin from the lamp. The fire goes out and we're no longer concerned with temperature. We're just present to receive the moment exactly as it is. Probably the hardest thing a human being can do.